The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines and a link to their calendar of events can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop. This week we're speaking with Josie and Nathan of the project The Spaces Between, a project about the rest of us. This is a zine which is a compilation of interviews with anarchists who live in smaller towns, away from so-called anarchist hotspots. In this zine, the interviewees illustrate what it is like to live outside of the spotlight in the anarchist culture and politic, further away from its attending benefits and downsides. These folks just yesterday finished touring with this zine. Keep your eyes peeled for the next one, though, which is tentatively scheduled for sometime later this year. You can read or download the full PDF of this zine and keep abreast of further doings at spacesbetweentour.wordpress.com. I'm talking with Josie and Nathan, who are members of the project The Spaces Between, a project for the rest of us. Will you describe the project, its goals, and your inspiration for it and the tour that you're currently on?
Yeah. So the project that we're working on, The Spaces Between, is a writing project that we just launched and are kind of using this tour that we're on right now to launch the project and its like further goals. And basically what the project is we're in the process of collecting interviews with people and essays from people who are engaged in struggle as anarchists in places that are not considered to be hot spots of anarchism or are outside of places that have a historic institutionalized left presence. So the places that we're featuring in this first publication that we have, which is just kind of a snippet of what we hope will be a much larger kind of anthology that we'll put out later down the line, are from places like Evansville, Indiana, Athens, Georgia, and Tucson, Arizona, some different places that are much more geographically or in some ways even politically isolated. But we also are including some interviews with people from Minneapolis, which definitely has an institutional left, but is pretty geographically isolated. And so we're kind of painting this idea of what these spaces between are with a fairly broad brush.
Awesome. Nathan, do you have anything to add to that?
I think, Josie, you've about covered it.
So the Spaces Between is currently on tour, and the writing project preceded the tour. What do you think the reason is for prioritizing anarchist activity in larger cities, or what y'all call in the zine the anarchist Disney worlds?
Well, a friend who actually lives in the Bay now but used to organize in some smaller places said that they like to refer to it more as anarchist Hollywood, where a lot of the media and representations of what anarchism looks like in North America come out of, but it's not necessarily an accurate portrayal of what happens on the ground there or in other places. So that has a lot to do with it, is like the Bay and even like other larger places are just a bit more prolific in putting themselves out there and have maybe more resources to like get that circulation a bit wider. So I think that is a big part of it, is sort of like the spectacle of all of it.
Part of like what we mean by anarchist Disney World, which is, you know, in our initial call out for this project, we got a little pushback on using that terminology. And it's meant to be a joke. It's meant to be tongue-in-cheek. Everyone who's involved with this project has either been to or continues to have some relationship with folks who are doing things in the Bay Area or in these kind of like hot spots of anarchy land. And those people took a little bit of offense in the beginning of Anarchist Disney World. You don't know what it's like out here. It's not all things on fire all the time. And we know that. But we also got a lot of positive feedback from people who exist in these places that we're kind of terming as the spaces between us. They get the joke. They understand what it is we're trying to say about that. And it is kind of, we talk a little bit in the zine, in the introduction to the project, as these places, like the Bay Area, a lot of what we see come out of there, these media representations, are, it's meme ready, right? It's things that are meant to look spectacular, and they're like aspirational imagery a lot of the time. But maybe we're trying to call into question a little bit, is that the only aspiration that people should be moving towards? And maybe ourselves as anarchists, maybe we are projecting as well.
Definitely. Is the prioritization, in your opinion, of activity in like anarchist strongholds or anarchist Disney worlds simply like, can you simply chalk it up to like spectacularization or like meme culture, or is there something else to it?
Yeah, for my own self, I think there is something else to it. And it's conversations that we've had with people along the way on this tour so far. We're kind of at our halfway point right now. And there is something more than just this, you know, anarchist spectacle or anarchist Disney World idea that's happening. I think in a lot of these places, people are drawn to migrating there as anarchists because there appears to be so much that's happening. And in my experience of people who've gone out there, and what I hear from other people as well, is that it's very easy to go out there and hop into something, but there's a lot less people who are engaged in the actual work to make those things happen, right? But in order to get to the spectacular moments, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes before you get there. And part of what I think happens a lot of the times in these spaces between, in these like more isolated or smaller regions, people are primarily engaged in the behind the scenes work, and there's not as much of an option to just show up when something is happening. People are much more likely to be deeply engaged in struggle in one way or another.
For sure. While I was reading the zine in preparation for this interview, it, as somebody who comes from a small town, and for the majority of my, at least like engaged political life, have lived in a small town as well. And it made me think about people's expectation of anarchist like political work, and how difficult it can be to feel effective, politically effective or whatever, and how people engage with that. And one quote from the introduction to y'all zine comes to mind, which goes, we don't live in an anarchist Disney world. We live in those places where nothing feels flammable and everything can feel impossible. We live in those places where we are truly engaged in what can best be described as the project of anarchy. And I really liked that as like something that brought anarchist or any political struggle into kind of on a more day-to-day level in a way. So I like that a lot.
Oh, thank you. I think for us, it's echoed in several of the responses that are to the interview questions in the zine of, you know, most of us who have been engaged politically for some, you know, on a longer timeline, have had the moments that are spectacular, whether they're, you know, spectacular for our small town or small city, or whether we've gone somewhere else and been engaged in, you know, a very spectacular moment. But that makes up such a small percentage of our lives. And we spend a lot more time trying to figure out how it is that we manifest our politics in our day-to-day lives, in our workplaces, in our homes, in our friendships, in our partnerships. You know, I'm raising children. I'm constantly in struggle of what does it look like to be an anarchist and a parent, and how do those things interact with one another?
So I am assuming that you have a lot of experience living in smaller towns. Would you mind talking about the so-called anarchist exoduses from smaller towns, from your experience and in the context of this project? You write in the zine, as well in the introduction to the zine, sometimes leaving is a part of the project of anarchism, as much as we hate to say it.
Yeah, I think Nathan could speak to that best.
Yeah, I'm from Richmond, Virginia, but about 8 months ago moved to Denver, Colorado, which, at least to people in Richmond at times, is far closer to an anarchist Disney world than Richmond. And I think that, like, an issue that happens in smaller places is their lack of connection to other smaller places or those big nodes of activity, and this really thick feeling of isolation that can happen. And part of building those connections and feeling less isolated, I think, can involve, you know, some of your friends leaving, but just trying to keep in touch and create that sort of bridge between these small places. Because I'm definitely not of the opinion that people should sort of like martyr themselves and stay in a place to make a point when they just don't feel. That's a recipe for burnout, and in my experience, almost led to. So I think it's far more important that people try to engage in the project of anarchy, so to speak, wherever they are, wherever they end up. It's far more important that that happens than they just stay in their geographic location.
And I actually live in Denver. I've lived in Denver for the last 13 years. And when I moved there, it was a small city, and now is actually the fastest growing city in the U.S. We're dealing with like three major types of, I guess, how to phrase it would be, dealing with like three major influxes of like a moneyed migration to the state of Colorado, primarily focused on Denver. And so the process of like gentrification, of police violence going hand in hand with that gentrification has heightened there a lot, and the city has grown quite a bit. We're experiencing like a rate of growth that's probably only best compared to the Bay Area or Austin, Texas, a few years ago. And so in Denver, our experience of being in a smaller city has changed really dramatically. And what kind of like strategies and tactics we once engaged in there in a smaller city, we're having to sort of challenge for ourselves as the place that we have been living in and engaged in, struggle in, is changing, and the political climate is changing as a result of that. But one of the things we have talked about with people as we've been on this tour of that idea that we talk about in the introduction, that sometimes leaving is a part of the project, we've jokingly said, you know, that maybe some of the things that happened in all of our Oogle days weren't so bad. Maybe we could take some of the good parts of it and leave the bad parts behind. But there used to be a time where there was a lot more travel and connection amongst places. And I think, you know, one of the benefits to everybody's convergence days was that you got to go somewhere and then meet people from across the country or across North America, build connections, build friendships, and then politically cross-pollinate and strategize together. And as that period of political struggle in North America died off, in many ways, there's benefits, right? People are much more engaged in localized struggle, which I think is a positive turn. But it's made building some of those connections much harder for people from isolated areas or from smaller towns and cities. And part of what we hope to do with this tour, beyond just providing a platform for people to share their struggles and stories and experiences, we hope to also challenge people to find ways of connecting with one another again, to find ways of cross-pollinating and strategizing with one another and building relationships that can be foundational to the emergence of like really exciting political projects and exciting engagement and struggle together.
Definitely. Have you found any of those ways so far on the tour, or like had any ideas about that?
I think we definitely have. I think the at times for me, actually, most of the time for me, what was far more fulfilling and beneficial was not the events themselves, although they're great, but was actually like sort of getting to spend a day or two with some solid crew of rad people doing rad shit in whatever location we were in. So for me, it's resulted in, I think, a strengthening of, like, some of which those people were people I already knew, but we actually got to spend time together, and it's a strengthening of ties and trust and a better understanding of where people are coming from that will hopefully result in far more collaboration on who knows what in the future, even outside of this writing project.
For sure. Do you think it's fair to say that anarchist activity in smaller places has suffered from internet culture, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, that's something that we've talked about during our events on this tour, is as that kind of phase of anarchy land died off, of, you know, convergences and mass mobilizations and people traveling for those things, people started to really rely upon social media and the internet as a means of engagement with one another and building connection. But what happens when you are relying on, you know, 140 characters on Twitter to share your story is there's a lot that's missing, and there's a lot of context that has to be just left out in that kind of format. And we tend to curate and glamorize what it is that's happening versus really giving a full picture, which allows for better engagement. I think there's a lot of positive things about the use of the internet. One of the people that we, or areas that we focused on in this particular installment of this project, in this zine that we're touring with, people from Modesto Anarcho, give like a reflection on the organizing that happened there, you know, from around like 2005 through just after Occupy. And Modesto folks out there, I think, utilize the internet in a good way, right? Of being able to highlight what was happening in their particular geographical context and political context, but also use it as a means of building deeper connection with people as well. And there, in many ways, I think Modesto went on through the years to influence the kind of where anarchism in the United U.S. has gone in these last few years. And I think there's ways to use the internet and social media positively, but we hope to kind of challenge the idea that that's the best platform for connection and engagement. And maybe it's a tool, but it's not an end-all be-all.
What are some of the ways that you've seen Modesto influence anarchism?
Well, I know for myself and for folks who are engaged in anarchist organizing in Denver, we kept close eye on what was happening in Modesto for many years. And their ways of not only, I mean, they were masterful at propaganda and putting out propaganda very consistently, but also the way that they engaged in a smaller city and in a conservative region. Denver, while it's a fast-growing city, in a lot of ways, it's still a small city, and we are in a fairly liberal bubble, but within a very conservative region. And the way that we saw Modesto kind of combine insurrectionary theory and politic along with actual, like, community-based organizing was very interesting to folks in Denver, and for us has influenced a lot of the work that happens there now, especially around anti-police struggle, organizing with families of people who've lost someone to police murder and violence. Yeah, I think a lot of the insurrectionary politic that, you know, in the mid-2000s was anti-organizational, I think Modesto challenged that, and I think a lot of people took note of that. If there's a way to hold these political theories and ideas while still being engaged with the communities that we live in and are a part of.
Yeah, definitely. I'm reminded of... Not to like get too far off track from our questions, but I was when you were talking about Modesto, I was reminded of reading about their relationship to the Bay, or rather, like, the Bay's relationship to them. as they described it in the zine, basically as being like kind of the dirty part of town where you would send guests to be like, and these are our kind of like small town relatives or whatever, like go see them, see how the other little people live or whatever. And I found that sort of heartbreaking in a way, but also kind of funny maybe. But yeah, like as a place that is so close to one of these hotspots or whatever, like something, the Bay lives so large in the anarchist imagination, especially in the United States. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
So apart from any obvious discrepancies, like resources and person power, can you talk about the differences between anarchist organizing in larger and smaller places? Or what are some of the differences that the Spaces Between was hoping to highlight?
I think a major thing we're trying to highlight here is that while we understand that the relationship with communities or circles of people or political tendencies in these bigger places can often be contentious and a little bit complicated, in smaller places, I think you make much stranger and closer relationships out of pure necessity times because of the lesser people and the different political terrain that you're operating on. I think that that is both a negative and a positive and can sometimes be a bit complicated for smaller town folks to navigate, because often, you know, at least in my experience, we're often reading things coming out of these larger places where people can have a bit more of a antagonistic relationship with liberals and other leftist groups because they have like some anarchists to back them up and they have their own spaces or their own projects that they're working on. But in my experience in Richmond, there is very rarely ever any explicitly anarchist project going on. Usually we're using the word radical. And I think that like, on the one hand, it's difficult for people to explore political tendencies that they're interested in because you can only get so deep into them with other people. But also, I think it allows for some like interesting ability to influence what the larger climate is in your town. I know that like there was a lot of anarchist involvement in a struggle to keep a stadium from being built downtown in Richmond in a place called Shaco Bottom. And anarchists were incredibly influential in how that struggle moved forward, especially tactically. We were the first ones to really push being bold and confrontational in our resistance, that I think even in the moment, because we'd already built some trust with folks kind of trusted us when I think in other situations they would have been apprehensive to allow anarchists to take such a hard and confrontational mode towards things in that town. And yeah, I think after things were kind of said and done, a lot of folks that normally wouldn't sing the praises of anarchists or anarchist tactics were actually very thankfulized that and credited us with a large part of helping to win that struggle. Not to diminish other people's involvement and contributions, but I think the direct action tactics we brought to the table were pretty pivotal in the last couple years of that struggle.
Was there like a meeting process for that project, or was it sort of a teaching by example, or how did like the direct action tactics get disseminated throughout the folks who were struggling against the stadium?
Well, Richmond is really addicted to meetings. and I think that's partially a result of, while I know that we all go to endless meetings, and I know that that is a experience that happens across the board, I think that like some of those smaller places, right, you don't have the experience and the trust of people to kind of understand how at least similar political tendencies will operate, and you don't have to talk about it as much. But so, yeah, there were some extensive meetings. There were way too many meetings. But also a little bit of it was just like a few people taking the initiative and bringing their friends in and just kind of being like, well, we're going to do this and see what happens.
You should also tell about the former city council person.
Yeah, we did have, there was a meeting in which after a couple of instances of banner drops and things that got a lot of attention and a couple of wheat pasting campaigns, we actually in a meeting had a former city councilman sort of nudge one of us and sort of say, you know, it would be pretty rad while we're doing this push here that, you know, some wheat pasted posters and maybe, you know, like if mysterious graffiti started showing up around town with similar messaging,
you're kidding.
Yeah, I don't think people there, anarchists in particular there, I don't think really realized how much of a win that really was in terms of like furthering the project of anarchy, so to speak, and the willingness of people to like be open to those ideas.
I wanted to ask our interviewees more about the differences between organizing in a town with a clearly established left versus not, but I forgot to. Luckily, Josie talks about it right here.
We definitely, you know, we recognize that people who are living in places like New York or the Bay Area, where there is this very present institutional left, we recognize that there are tremendous downsides for everybody when that's in place. And there's also benefits that can come from that, like resource-wise, especially with money, that can be a helpful thing. But, you know, in these places where that doesn't exist, what Nathan has been talking about and highlighting is you have so much more room as anarchists to just through engagement on, you know, engagement in the political landscape of your location, you have so much more room to show how these politics are actually enacted, how they can manifest. And I know for folks out in Denver, while we're a very fast-growing city and there's a lot changing, the political landscape is slower to change. And we still, you know, folks who are engaged, especially in anti-police struggles as anarchists out in Denver, we have had to make like strange bedfellows at times in organizing relationships. Like probably the most staunch defender of anarchists in the Denver metro area is like the chair of the Green Party, who's like a personal friend and is the type of person who will make a phone call and say, hey, it'd be really great if some of my more rowdy friends would show up at this event. And there's a lot of room to grow those politics and tendencies in ways that are just not as possible in a big city, and especially in a big city that has such a stranglehold from the left. We talk about in the introduction of the zine, the idea of like the left as the wet blanket, right? The wet blanket on the flames. And in Denver, that's starting to be more the case, but there has been a long period of time where that was not the case. And we were able to push things much further in ways that maybe don't look as spectacular, you know, and aren't as ready to be a meme on Twitter, but at least to the people who are involved feel very spectacular and have had very palpable impact.
Definitely. I really liked that you brought up some of the things that are possible, like in smaller settings that aren't so much possible in larger settings. And I think that probably a majority of anarchists live in smaller places. And I think that there's a predominance of like inferiority or like depression. And I like that is not shied away from in the spaces between, because it's a super real, you know, fact of life. If you live, you know, with the cognitive dissonance that a lot of anarchists live with, I think that it gives rise to things like that. But yeah, I like that you bring that up. We're speaking with Nathan and Josie, folks who are a part of the project The Spaces Between. More after this musical break, where we'll continue with A Silver Mount Zion's There Is a Light, lyrics of which are featured in the Spaces Between zine, available online at thespacesbetweentour.wordpress.com. A Silver Mount Zion is from Montreal, and they are an anarchist project, as far as I know. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina, and this is The Final Straw. Thank you. So I was wondering if you would talk about your tour. Like you said, you're in the middle of it. Can you talk about what both of y'all's initial hopes for the tour were and what your experiences have been like? How have their reactions been thus far?
When we got to our first stop on this tour was in Chapel Hill. And after the event, somebody asked about, okay, what places do you have booked to go from here? And we're listing off the places that we're going. They're like, wait a minute, those aren't small towns. A lot of the goal of this tour and kicking off this project, we chose to go to places like one of our stops. We just left New York. We went to Philly. We'll be going to Chicago and Minneapolis in a few days here. And part of the goal was to go to some of these bigger places and try and kick off a conversation. One of the goals of this project as a whole is to hopefully flip the script a little bit of we spend, I think a lot of us as anarchists, like you're talking about, we do live with a lot of cognitive dissonance. We have really big dreams and aspirations that many of us will never see come to fruition. And we spend a lot of time, I think, looking at other places and thinking that the grass is greener. And for a lot of anarchists, the places that we look are places like the Bay Area or other, you know, cool new spots of anarchism. And we very rarely look at our own context, let alone people who are living in similar ones. And we hoped with this tour to kind of present an opportunity to do that for people to see what's happening in these other places. Because there's very different way of engaging as anarchists when you live in a smaller context, smaller city or isolated place. And I think there's a very interesting use of tactic and strategy that comes with that. I'm wanting to highlight some of that for people elsewhere. And I think we've had really good responses. We've had, in some places, we've had a lot of curiosity about some of the terminology that we're putting out there, this idea of like anarchist Disney World, this phrase like the project of anarchy, and had some challenging for us discussions around that. And that was also another hope of this tour. This project is, we're not touring with a completed project, we're touring as the launch of a project that we hope will grow from here. And our hope has been that this tour would inform where the project goes and some of the directions that we take. I think that definitely has happened.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I like to look at this as the start of a conversation way more than we had an event with students at University of Pittsburgh, and one of them sort of like half joking, but I think half serious, asked us, so what do we do? And we definitely like, in a few of those side conversations informally after events of people being like, what do you think about what we should do about this? And I definitely always tell people like, we don't have any answers, and this isn't some sort of like, we're not bringing around a program. Although in the zine, Modesto sort of does lay out a 5-point program of how to get it done in small towns.
There are literally 5 points from Modesto with sub-bullets. So if people in small towns do want a 5-point plan, it's in the zine.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, we're just figuring all this out ourselves as we go. I mean, even this project is very much by the seat of our pants. And so, I mean, that is sort of the project of anarchy, right? We're all just sort of figuring it out as we go. And I think something that I've been trying to bring to the table a lot, especially in the last few years, is a little bit of humility and being like, okay with the fact that we don't have all the answers for everything, but like there are some interesting experiments happening in these places that aren't so focused on, and we want to highlight them and we want to find out about them ourselves.
Which in and of itself is like an anarchic tactic, I think, just generating more and more questions and more ways to rethink what we do. So that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As far as the more challenging conversations go, were they focused primarily around this, like defining the project of anarchy, or have there been some other hard-hitting questions that y'all have had to tangle with?
Probably the most pushback that we've gotten on anything around this project thus far has been around the term Anarchist Disney World. And like I had said before, it is meant to be tongue-in-cheek, and it's a joke that a lot of people instantly get, and then it's a joke that people who live in Anarchist Disney World aren't laughing at. So, but the rest of us who are in these spaces between, we are laughing. So I feel like that's where we've had the most pushback. But in having deeper conversations with people, I think people understand more of what we're talking about. As we move forward in the project, included in with people's interviews and essay submissions, there'll also be some writing that we're working on with people who are doing this project to kind of define and hash out a lot more of this, these concepts and ideas that we're talking about. And so along this tour, the conversations that we've had have helped in that process of trying to take an input from people and allow that to influence the direction of things. But I still hold strong that I think Anarchist Disney World, I think we might have really hit on something with that terminology.
I'm just trying to think about Disney World as reimagined by anarchy. Like that is the place my mind. So there's like Mickey Mouse masked up, all the rides are free, there's cotton candy everywhere. It sounds kind of all right to me personally.
It does sound pretty good envisioned in that way.
Yeah.
But there's also the idea of truly, I admit I have been to Disney World, the non-anarchy one, and it's this strange place where everything is a fantasy and you can show up and you don't have to do anything. The fantasy is just happening all around you. And in a sense, I think that's where a lot of people who leave these spaces between, that's what they think that they're going to when they arrive in a place like the Bay Area. They think that they're going to the fantasy. And the longer that you stay in the fantasy, the more that you see all of the cracks within it and all of the fractures that exist and the exhaustion and the burnout of the people who are performing. And so I think as an analogy for places like that, I think it has worked well. Disneyland's a place to visit. It's not a place to live necessarily.
Absolutely. And I might get in trouble for saying this, but whenever I've visited larger towns or like hotspots or however you want to say that, the thing that I've located most strongly is this like intense sense of being alone in a crowd or being just having this embarrassment of choices with people that you hang out with, and you can tailor exactly your friends exactly to the finer points of your politics. And schism is maybe like the word that like best describes, places like is full of amazing people, none of whom talk to each other. And it's just crazy to me that happens. But I don't mean to talk. I like that point of like, yeah, Disneyland, not a place to necessarily live, like a place to go and eat free popcorn all day and punch masked up Mickey Mouse or whatever. Where did that term come from? Just out of curiosity, is it something that y'all coined?
I think it's just a term that friends of mine and I have used as a joke for some time, especially from watching the way that the Bay popped off around, especially Occupy, and then again post-Ferguson. There were a lot of jokes amongst friends of, God, wouldn't it be great to buy a ticket to Disney World? But, I have a lot of respect and a lot of love for the way that people do turn up out there. And it is inspirational to people. And I don't want to discredit that in any way, that in many ways it sets a tone. And in the zine there, we ask people the question in this first round of interviews, what lessons have y'all taken from these larger strongholds? And a lot of the sentiment that people have conveyed is that it's possible, that, that it's real, that these things can happen. And I do think that there's something to be said for that, that it it's shown people glimpses of what it looks like to turn up in those ways and when a whole city is turning up together. And the realities of that, you know, on the ground afterwards, you know, in aftermath when it's legal cases and it's fundraising for people's lawyers and all that, see more of, honestly, get a fuller picture of what that looks like, as opposed to just a glamorized version of it.
A lot of these terms and like sort of the cheekiness does come from like our conversations with numerous friends on the porch, you know? And I think Denver in particular has a culture of like making a lot of jokes even at each other. But I do think it's pretty telling that the only people that have seem to have such an issue with the term are people from those places. And folks from these smaller places, the places in between that we're talking about, seem to get it immediately. And that's my first sign that we've kind of like touched on something that's important and that people want to talk about. That being said, I've considered numerous times moving to the Bay Area and still might at some point, if things in my life line up. It's beautiful. It's awesome. There's a, and it not just like anarchy land, but it's just a beautiful place to be. It's also really hard. It's the first thing I noticed the first time I was ever there for only a few days is like you feel the tension in the air when you walk through the Mission District. Stuff is pretty messed up there, and rent is really high, and cops kill people all the time. And so it's not like a playground, but I think that that Disney World still applies because Disney World is obscuring a lot of evil things, right, with this spectacular fantasy. So I don't know. I still think the term works, and, you know, we can wax philosophical about it forever because of that.
For sure. And yeah, I think that maybe it seems to me to be a apt, gentle critique. Yeah.
Well, I think we should have a little more humor sometimes anyway, and just be okay with speaking in hyperbole, tongue in cheek.
Yeah. I'm in Asheville, which is apparently where anarchists go to die. So
I've heard that. Asheville, coming from Richmond, Asheville was a place that at least for a short time we looked to a little bit. And same with like Chapel Hill, Carrboro, as being like these regional hotspots. We actually joked with people in Chapel Hill that Chapel Hill was sort of the Bay of the South. And so I don't know, like those hotspots can kind of come out of nowhere. And sometimes it seems like in these smaller places, at least for a while. And that's something I would like to highlight too, is like, how do these places get, like, how do you get there when you don't have this long history that is like kind of hard to find where the beginning is? It seems like Olympia is sort of cool again. At one time, Eugene was sort of a anarchist mecca, so to speak.
It was actually interesting. We got a lot of people reaching out in response to our initial call for submissions and participation. And we got an email from folks in Eugene where they felt like they needed to spend several paragraphs explaining that it is not the hotspot that it once was. And things like kind of suck there now, and they really want to be involved, and they would like us to come there. And I think it is kind of interesting to see how even these like small places can become these flashpoints of struggle that attract people to them. And in a lot of ways, that's like an anarchist tradition, right? That, you know, there's a flashpoint of struggle and anarchists want to go to where the struggle is. There's as many positives and benefits to that as there are negatives. And I think, like I was saying before, there has been a focus over the last few years, maybe like last 5 years or so, across like the broader North American anarchist milieu of really localizing struggle and not jumping from place to place. But I think there's a way that maybe we could do both. And I hope that part of this project will encourage people to be finding that those ways together.
Yeah, definitely. Like still having a kind of vagabond spirit while still maintaining some kind of relationship to place. That seems like a good thing. Do either of y'all have a personal recommendation on how to reformat that tradition? Or if we should at all?
Well, I think more than ever, people are more mobile, easier to get in touch with, more precarious in where they live. I mean, we were in Richmond and there were 30 people in the room and only one person had actually lived in Richmond their whole life in the whole room. And we were in New York and there were probably 20 to 25 people in the room and only like three people in the room had lived in New York their whole life. And so I think that like all of those things can be disadvantages. I mean, we all know that the disadvantages of being so precarious and not having like a stabilized community and neighborhood culture and all that stuff, that those things that used to create these hotbeds, these kind of fixtures of struggle. But I think there's also advantages to like the ways in which we're able to keep in touch, even with a long distance between us, and this ability to get from one place to another, that there's advantages that we can take as strength sometimes. So I don't know. I don't have any sort of clear picture on it myself, but I think that I definitely like to travel and go places and see new things. And every time I go to those places, I like to find where anarchists are doing things and exchange contact information. And that's at least the first practical step.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't think I'd ever put those two things together, traveling and rootlessness in the most positive context and like having a relationship to space. That's super, super interesting. Speaking of place, and maybe to talk about the zine a little bit more, the interview zine, you interviewed people from a wide variety of places. I think there's seven of them. There's Evansville, Minneapolis, Minnesota, British Columbia, Modesto, California, Louisville, Kentucky, Athens, Georgia, and Tucson. Would you talk about some of the similarities that you saw in those interviews, as well as any differences you located? And was there anything within those interviews that you were expecting or that you were surprised by?
Well, there's definitely some common themes in responses. And I think it's good to temper the noticing of common themes, the remembrance that like these people are all self-proclaimed anarchists. So clearly they view the world in somewhat similar ways. Obviously, there's going to be personal nuance there, but there's an underlying approach. One of the things that we noticed right off the bat in reviewing the responses that we got from people was that there's, from the smallest place that we interviewed folks from, which would be Evansville, to the larger places that we interviewed people, everyone touched on, at least as a common thread, everyone touched on as struggles or flashpoints of struggle in their communities, police violence and gentrification. Obviously, gentrification looks very different in Evansville, Indiana, than it does in Tucson, Arizona, or elsewhere. But I would say some of the broadest or most stark differences that we noticed was between everywhere else and Tucson, I think the difference is pretty stark. In Tucson's responses, they explain their context politically as being living in a war zone that only some people recognize and only some people are engaged with. And that's a fairly accurate description of the borderlands of the U.S. in general, the southern borderlands, that people are really engaged in struggle in a way that feels, that not just feels, but actually is about life and death, where death is a part of struggle there in very tangible and palpable ways. And not to say that people aren't experiencing that in other places, but it looks very different. So it's probably one of the starkest differences. I hope that as this project continues, we'll be able to have people from other parts of the borderlands participate in one way or another, whether through an interview or through an essay submission. There's some very interesting perspective that comes from that type of struggle that really in the U.S. most of us are not experiencing. In Denver, we get some taste of it because we are not all that far from the border and there is a lot of migration that happens. And so a lot of the broader organizing that happens in Denver is around issues of migration, deportation, ICE raids. But that's also something that seems to be the trajectory for most of the country where it's headed, right? That this in the interviews from people in Tucson, they say that there, the government is losing its mask of humane governance and that the cracks are very obvious. And I think that's becoming the case for many more of us, being able to see those cracks in the mask of humane governance.
I mean, to me, that was the starkest difference as well. I do think that from what I read, some of the smaller places and more rural places that we talk to, environmental devastation is much more on people's mind, at least in this first round of interviews, than some of the larger places like Minneapolis. I think everyone obviously knows about it and talks about it, but I think as far as the concrete struggles that are being engaged with, that it seems like folks that feel a bit closer to the land are more immediately disturbed by what's happening. And so I think that can be a difference with geography that I'm hoping to highlight more of when it comes to the way in which geography and population affects the issues that people are directly confronting.
Will that be part of the next round of interviews or the next round of questioning?
I think that will come up with some of the next round, especially with, we want to do some follow-ups with some of the folks that we interviewed for this first one to get a little bit deeper into what they're talking about.
How did you come up with the interview questions?
I wish that there was like a way that sounded like really smart of how we came up with those questions. We really came up with them in like sitting in a coffee shop, like, what do we want to know about what's going on for other people? That maybe there wasn't as much intention in it as I would hope to make it sound like there was. But really, we tried to ask questions that were pretty broad. Some of them are vague, and we intended for them to be vague because we really wanted for people to interpret their responses in a way that reflected their own conditions a bit more. And instead of us asking very leading questions, trying to ask questions to get the answers we wanted to ask questions where people could answer in ways that made sense for them.
That's on the reel. I really enjoyed the person from Evansville, Indiana, as an interview, because most of the time they gave very, very like brief and succinct answers to the questions. And I'm not remembering what specifically they were in what order, but there was one question that y'all asked that was like, what project are you doing right now? And the people from Evansville were like, we're building an anarchist stronghold like Exarchia, so we're just going to have an anarchist neighborhood. And I was just like, fuck, yeah, that's so awesome. They're like, we've been buying land for 10 years or like buying a neighborhood or something for 10 years. And like, we're just going to build this neighborhood. That's what we're doing right now. I really, really, really enjoyed that. So for all the folks out there,
yeah.
Exarchia in the United States, Evansville, Indiana.
I really enjoyed the answers from folks in Evansville as well. And I think like it makes a lot of it, I think highlights how many people feel that shit feels pretty bleak sometimes, you know, a lot of the times a lot of us are living hard lives and survival is how we spend a lot of our time, like just figuring out how to survive and be working towards thriving beyond just surviving. And I think that their answers highlight that in a lot of ways, the struggle, but then also, you know, they describe it as in Evansville, there's like three, maybe four anarchists, but like, f*** it, we're building Exarchia in the U.S. Like, I love the grand ambition while also just the total brutal honesty of things are hard.
Yeah, and it's that intersection that is just so interesting. And I feel like I could talk about it with y'all forever. But I don't want to take up too much of your time. So perhaps I will just ask, so where can people submit material and read the current text? Y'all have a website, right?
Yeah, we do. So we have a website that is spacesbetweentour.wordpress.com. And right now there's just kind of minimal stuff on there. But as we get back from tour, there's going to be more things that'll be popping up. Prior to these essays and interviews being published into completed book or series of zines, we're not sure what that'll look like in the end, but prior to that, we'll be like putting snippets of things up onto the website, and we'll also be putting kind of like a tour report back, reflections, and updates as well. And the you can also find on there the dates that we have coming up for the remainder of this tour. Tonight, we're in Bloomington right now, and then from here, we'll be heading to Chicago, Milwaukee, and Minneapolis, and then home, which I'm also very much looking forward to going home.
You wouldn't consider coming to Asheville, would you?
I think we will be coming. So we did go out to Chapel Hill, but it's further than I thought from Chapel Hill to Asheville. So we do plan on doing a second tour later in the year. Asheville is a place that we hope to go to. And then we also are hoping to go through a lot more like isolated places than we did this time. Some smaller spots in the Midwest, the Deep South, and the Southwest.
Well, if you do come through, you definitely have a place to stay.
Thanks.
For sure.
Yeah.
Is there anything else y'all would like to add?
I do want to make sure that we give a shout out to our friend Sam, because he's actually also very involved with this project and was supposed to be on this leg of the tour, but for personal reasons had to drop off the tour. Just so people know, it's not just the two of us working on this. And then it's actually, we're hoping to maybe collaborate and bring in a lot more input. As always, our porch is sort of our meeting room, and anyone that is a part of those conversations has had some influence on this project. Big thanks to everyone that submitted stuff so far and shown interest, because it's been awesome. And we've gotten a lot of feedback without really having to put ourselves out there very much. So.
And also I do want to maybe just add on there as like a shout out. If you have already like emailed us and contacted us about participating or us coming to your town in some way, and we've not responded yet, we will. We just like getting ready for this tour and finishing up the zine with a lot of prep, and we were pretty focused on that, and then we've been out of town. But when we get home, people can expect emails back.
Awesome. You guys, it has been a total pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines and a link to their calendar of events can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop. You just heard an interview with Nathan and Josie about the project The Spaces Between, a project about the rest of us. We spoke about some nuances of life that some anarchists from smaller towns experience, observations about their recently concluded tour, and about why it might be nice to all return to our Oogle ways. If you'd like to hear more from these folks, you can visit their website, spacesbetweentour.wordpress.com, and or stay tuned to Crime Think's podcast, The Ex-Worker, on which a post-tour interview will be featured sometime within the next few months. They can be found at crimethink.com/podcast.